Hello, this is Kate Sheehan Roach here with Jane Galloway, the author of the best-selling book, The Gateways, The Wisdom of 12-Step Spirituality. Jane is really an amazing teacher who comes to us with a wealth of experience, personally with the 12 steps, but professionally, very accomplished career in theater and in film. She's also a very learned woman in terms of her higher degrees from Claremont School of Theology in religion and in ministry. She is also a drug and alcohol educator, a drama therapist, and just the list goes on and on of Jane's experience. And it has all culminated in this fantastic book called The Gateways, where she brings the 12 steps to a new level. Welcome, Jane. I'm so glad to talk with you today.
Thank you. Hi, Kate.
Hey, I'm so excited by this book. I mean, the 12 steps have changed so many lives, and we're all, you know, people in and out of the programs are recognizing the gift of these 12 steps, of just how transformative they are. But you've taken them to a new level. Tell us what you've done here with the Gateways.
Well, I'll tell you, I was a pastor of a church in New York, a spiritual director is probably the better terminology, of a new thought / interspiritual community. And I am, as you said in the intro, able to teach many things. I was a counselor for a number of years, addictions counselor, addiction and recovery counselor, then was a drama therapist. As I was moving into graduate school, this is after having had a very long career as a professional actor, and so I began to try to figure out how to teach these concepts that I was learning. Then I went to Claremont School of Theology and learned all of this religion, so I was trying to figure out when I was in New York how to teach all of these many myriad things I know to people so that they could become practical in their lives. And I wasn't strictly adhering to a new thought teaching, although it's very much part of what I teach. So one of my members said to me one day, look, you can teach so many things, but what we want to know is what works for you. I immediately said, oh, well, that's easy. It's the 12 steps plus all this other stuff that I've done for all these over 30 years, complementary, or as we say in medicine, integrative tools that I've utilized along with the 12 steps. She said, write that. We need that. So honestly, she kind of shoved me at writing this. I mean, because she said, you need to codify it as well. So I began to write about it, and that ended up being the Gateways.
Wonderful. Well, I've enjoyed the book thoroughly. I keep going back and back over it because there's so much here. You've really provided such a broad spectrum of practices that we can bring to each of the 12 steps to personalize them and deepen them in ways that, you know, only enhance the steps. I know some people are very, in the recovery world, we have people who are against the 12 steps. We have people who are devoted to the 12 steps. We have all this, but what you've done is you've given people choices so they can put together what works for them. But tell us specifically. I love the book, but I've read it already. Tell people who haven't read it, you know, how you've gone about presenting the bento box. Tell them about the bento box.
Well, I'll get to that in a second, but I think one way I'd like to just describe this is that you've said some people are for the steps, some people are against the steps. Really, my attempt has been to universalize the 12 steps. How do I create a universal teaching out of the 12 steps that's not specifically related to alcohol, drugs, addiction, and recovery? I have attempted to universalize them and create, in a way, a theology out of the 12 steps. So that's been my attempt in doing this. And I think you can't do the second part, which is the bento box, without doing the first part. And the first part is, you know, it starts with my story and why 12-step spirituality, and then really goes into some of the history of the country and how we were susceptible and ready to be opened up by a program like this 12-step program after World War II. I see the fact that a lot of very interesting things came together and converged at a certain time to create what has become this 12-step nation, really. So, you know, I try to put the book in a historic context and also a personal context, and bring in some of the different theological approaches that I see relating to the process of the 12 steps. And then the second half of the book is really a how-to. Mm-hmm. It's really, how do you practice this? I was working with a Presbyterian minister in New York who's a dear friend, and actually my community met in his church, and he kept saying, okay, I understand what you're talking about, but how do you do it? Mm-hmm. How would I teach this to my congregation? I want to know about this. He wasn't particularly interested in the recovery angle of the thing. He wanted to see, how do you do it? And I said, well, I'm developing a system. I see it kind of as a bento box, because I love Japanese food, but I also love the aesthetics of the bento box, you know, take two from column A and one from column B.
Tell people who haven't had a bento box, tell them what it is.
Well, a bento box is a box in which there are little compartments, and, you know, you put seasoned rice in one and maybe sushi in another and some cooked meat in another, and the box remains the same, but you can change the contents.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like the metaphor of an interspiritual bento box. Who knows why ideas come to us, but this came forward, and it seemed like a good template for describing.
Well, it fits the way you nourish your readers very well in a balanced way. So I love that it's a metaphor of Japanese food, because it's delicacies from different food groups.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing is, you know, it's probably completely apostasy for some really fundamentalist people to look at something like this, because what I'm saying is you can practice sacred traditions from many different traditions in your life and not be going to hell, or not be having to say, you know, wait a minute, isn't that a Muslim tradition, or isn't that a Hindu tradition? So I give many, I divide them by body, mind, spirit tools, and really talk about different sacred traditions from many, many different traditions. So the bento box is kind of a revolutionary idea, really, giving people at that point of step 11, which is this point of expanding, contacting our higher power and really expanding our spiritual contact on a daily basis, giving more options. You know, the founders of AA, which is where the 12 steps, you know, were born, really kind of, you know, talked about kind of a you know, Christian kind of a thing. And that has alienated a lot of people, too. I know a lot of Jewish people who just say, I don't relate to the 12 steps. It's so Christian. Well, I didn't find them Christian at all. And if you read the beginning literature, it's not really Christian.
Right. It was intentional, right? They were intentionally trying to keep it available to all, which, you know, you've taken that a step further.
I think they were trying to translate what had happened to them.
Mm.
But I have come to feel that, you know, it wasn't all that intentional, no. I think they were just trying to say, oh, my, how did this happen? I'm sober. Mm. And now these people want to know how this works. I don't know how it works. Let me try to write it down. I mean, I don't think it was all that intentional. I think it was arduous for Bill Wilson to try to put this big book together. Mm. And I think
you can relate now that you've written The Great Ways, right? I mean, you understand what a Herculean task that is.
Yeah, but he really talks in that he studied or was very influenced by Emmett Fox. And Emmett Fox is a wonderful metaphysical teacher whose Sermon on the Mount, his metaphysical interpretation of the Sermon on the Mount really influenced Bill. And a lot of that feel of that work is very much part of the work of the 12 steps. He was just looking to figure out, I'm looking for this quote from the big book. It says, Bill Wilson writes this. He says, to us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
from the big book.
Mm, beautiful.
That's what it's about, and that's what he wrote about. So that's the spirit of this, but my book is really more of a how-to. Okay, that's cool. So, you know, a lot of people go back to their original, if they had one, they go back to their original religion and go running out the door because mm-hmm. there's a lot of still ignorance and stigma and narrow-mindedness around the whole idea of addiction. Oh, good, you're back, you're saved from, you know, being this horrible person. Well, no person who's working the 12 steps feels that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fantastic, wonderful expansion of life. But it's not about, oh, yes, I was this terrible person, and now I'm back, and I'm going to let you, you know, convert me again. It's just not the spirit of the 12 steps at all. And so, really, I mean, people were looking for something. I have found so many people over the years who are searching for a spiritual path. And frankly, I've been sober 38 years. It's kind of like a long time. And so longer than maybe a lot of our listeners have even been alive. But what I have experienced over these years, because I have worked with hundreds of people who have been trying to get sober, have been trying to get grasp of the program, I have found that the number one thing that makes people not be able to stick with the program, I have found, now this is me, I mean this isn't research, it's my own experience, is an inability to latch on to some spiritual path that mm-hmm. works for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a lot of condemnatory, language that happens as people get well. Everybody brings their own level of healing and wounding into an AA meeting. So especially for women, for gay people, for people who are, you know, have already been told, you're less than, mm-hmm. we don't want you in our religion, you're, you know, wrong for being who you are. The last thing they need to do is walk into an AA meeting and have somebody who's working out their own wounding say, you've got to take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. And there can just be this whole culture.
Harshness, yeah. Well, that's why I'm so thankful.
Fundamentalism, in a way.
Yeah, I'm so thankful to you, Jane. First of all, we're long overdue for a woman's voice here. And what you've done, I mean, you just quoted a beautiful phrase from the Big Book. And I'd like to quote you to you, if I may, here, a beautiful phrase, turn a phrase that you've included here in the Gateways, right kind of toward the middle beginning of the book. You're talking about the way the Gateways are a spiritual practice and an inner walk, and you ask three questions that I'll remind you of and ask you to elaborate on them a little bit. But you say some questions for you as you prepare to embark on the inner walk, and you ask three questions. You say, are you ready for something truly new? Are you prepared to weather the journey inward? And are you ready to be made whole? I love that, Jane. Yep. I love the way you pose these questions and you draw people in with no commands, just questions. Talk about those questions.
Well, those questions are really extrapolated from my very, very favorite Jesus encounter at the Bethesda Fountain. And Jesus shows up on one of his travels. He shows up at this fountain, which is a healing fountain. And there is a gentleman who has been there, oddly, for 38 years. Now, the way the Bethesda Fountain works is that an angel troubles the waters every day. Every day. He had every day to get there of these 38 years. And if you can get somebody to help you get in, if you're crippled or something and you need some help, then the thing is that you will be healed. And as Jesus walks by, he encounters this gentleman and realizes he's been there 38 years. And the man goes into his victim story. And he tells him, you know, look, I've been here all this time, and nobody will help me get into the water. Now, you know, Jesus was an amazing psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can just hear his inner dialogue. It's like, 38 years, and nobody could help. You know, get you to the water. And I envision this guy as having his whole setup really hooked up around that fountain. You know, his mail was delivered there. Everybody knew to go ask him if you needed something delivered to somebody's house. I mean, this was his spot. He was stuck. He was stuck in the victim place. Mm. He wasn't ready to be made whole. And Jesus, the great psychologist, says to him, after what I hear as a theatrical pause, when he says all of the reasons he is not able to get to this fountain, Jesus says, do you want to be made whole? And the drama of that moment and the pathos of that moment is pure theater. In that moment, that man who had bought his victim story, who had told us every single reason he couldn't stop doing whatever it was doing, whatever he was doing that was keeping him stuck at that place, all of that stuff had to fall away and go through his own head. And then he said, yes. And Jesus said, then pick up your pallet and walk. And the man did.
Mm-hmm.
So I see these questions as critical, and they come straight from the Jesus path. Really, are you ready? Do you want to be made whole? That is an amazingly profound question, and that's really, honestly, in my mind, the only question.
Yes, yes. And so this is such a beautifully placed moment in your book as you're about to launch into the, giving people the tools. Just, you know, giving people the tools to enter into their own healing. You're not doing it for them. You don't have a formula that's prescribed in any way. You're just giving people a selection of tools that each complements a step of the 12 steps. So tell us about the gateways. Why are they called the gateways? And,
well,
and how exactly
they're
do they work?
Yeah, they're openings into a new level of awareness, a new level of deepening. Back to this idea of this is not proscribed. The thing I love about the 12 steps is that they say this book is meant to be suggestive only. So nobody's ever going to cram sobriety down anyone's throat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely voluntary situation. And, you know, people go to meetings for themselves and to be helpful to other people who will come after them. But honestly, everybody's there to save their own life. And so nobody is preaching. And anybody who, you know, I mean, I'm a preacher, so I end up preaching elsewhere, but not at AA,
because
it's not coercive. A lot of religions are coercive. If you don't do this, this will happen to you. Okay. So that's, you know, very, very difficult and very off-putting, and certainly off-putting to most people who are at you know, addicted in any kind of way. I'm kind of stumbling over these words partly because I don't want to just say alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a wonderful phrase I love from the program, too, that says alcoholics are just like everyone else, only a little more so. And it's that
right.
A little more so
right.
Part that's both fantastic about addicted people, you know, but it's also can be quite troubling and difficult. So anyway.
Right, right. Well, the literature is expanding. Not only the gateways, but so many books are being written now about how we are all addicted, you know, that's a human trait. So it's, although the 12 steps were born out of AA and certainly they work, that's why we use them, they really can be applied to every form of addiction that is so common in our culture today.
Yeah, but, or we're finding our way out of kind of a paper bag, too. I mean,
right, anything that enslaves us, anything that holds us
anything
prisoner.
Anything that enslaves us, yeah, I would agree.
Right.
So the gateways,
right,
really, I see as openings into a deeper, deeper, deeper level. So as I described before, I see the 12 steps as a developmental model that is very in sync with other developmental models, and you start at the very beginning, and so they're very in sync with me and always have been, I mean, for many years, with the chakra system, because there's the root chakra. So, and Maslow's hierarchy of needs says, you know, you can't build upon a non-existent foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for people to become self-actualized, they have to deal with the basics in their lives. So they have to deal with food, clothing, and shelter. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that in AA, they call it sex, security, and society. And these are the things that people are dealing with at that root level. And so I built a structure that gives options for dealing with that particular level of development. You know, we are multidimensional people, and so to work through some of these layers can require things other than a cognitive or mental way of looking at it. So these are tools.
So tell us about the chakras. You mentioned the chakras, but not everybody knows what that means. Tell us how that applies as a gateway.
Well, the chakras are an ancient Hindu understanding of the energetic body. They're seen as a whirling kind of light center beginning at the base or root chakra, which is right at the top of the legs, kind of at the bottom of the sacrum. And then they move up the body and then go up. There are seven of them, and I've just learned that there are several others which are extra physical, so they go up above the body. But the typical chakra, that the system that many of us have been exposed to, is the seven that are connected to the body. So the root chakra deals with security. It deals with basic issues of being grounded and has a color that correlates with it, which is red. And then the next one is about one of these levels of generativity that Eric Erickson talks about, but it's about procreation. It's all of those organs which have to do with procreation, and the color there is kind of an orange yellow, and the chakras move up the body, and they're seen as a healing tool. Now, mystics and healers and people who have a certain kind of sight often can see the chakras. I've never seen them, but I have had people work on me who have said, oh, we got to get your chakras turning in the right direction. So I don't know. It felt better when I got out of the session, so I guess they got them turning in the right direction.
Right.
But they're an energy source, and this is one way that one tradition has described them. You know, I've mentioned Maslow a number of times. One of the things I love about Maslow, Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, is that he was one of these developmental psychologists who said, wait a minute, why are we only studying people who are very, very, very emotionally sick and using them in the field called abnormal psychology?
Yes,
you've heard of that? So people used to study that, abnormal psych. So you're learning the worst, most awful possibilities of a broken person mentally, and then you're using that to diagnose people. He said, why aren't we studying self-actualized people, people who have really made a fantastic life out of something that wasn't going well? And so he began to develop this, and so what he developed was very, very much like the chakra system. His very first thing was people have to develop some sense of groundedness before they're able to then build upon those, what he called higher levels, and then he eventually gets to where the crown chakra is, which is at the pineal gland or the top of the head, and then that's about enlightenment. So so they correlate so much. I mean, the chakra system and the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the Kabbalah Sefirot is a tree. It's a tree, the Kabbalah system, which is a actually Spanish Jewish system of wisdom, amazing wisdom, which talks about the tree of life, and really seeing this as a metaphor for spiritual growth, and it really is kind of formed like a tree, but that's developmental too. And when you begin looking at some of these systems, you begin to realize, wait a minute, people were teaching or utilizing this very same kind of method throughout the millennia through different cultural lenses and somehow miraculously into the very willing and desperate lives of these two guys, Bill W. and Dr. Bob, came this same system that had been utilized for millennia. And it was made very, very intensely practical so that they could really utilize the very basic understanding of I need to get, you know, I'm powerless over this thing that has grabbed me by the throat. So, you know, and so it applied to alcoholism, and then was this enlightened spiritual path. I went to a wonderful evening in New York many years ago. Lois Wilson actually was there. It was an Al-Anon evening at the Hilton Hotel, and she was in her last years. But they showed a film strip, and it
Lois being the wife of Bill W., the founder. Make sure people know who Lois.
Yes,
Lois.
No,
she's really the only woman involved from the get go, right? She was married to one of the founders.
And Sister Ignatia, who was somebody who was very, very involved at the Towns Hospital with early recovery. There were a few women who were involved with the whole recovery movement, and a woman named Marty Mann. But yes, Lois Wilson founded, along with Bill's, I mean, really at Bill's suggestion, she founded a group, the Al-Anon Family Group, for people who are the families of alcoholics. But so she was at this banquet, and they showed a film which had some funny 1950s kind of drawings as part of it, but one of them was this young person on a hillside reaching upward, and it said, "We were seeking spirit, capital S, through spirits, small s."
Yes.
There
yes.
has never been any kind of mincing of words that by people within the program. You know, people.
Right. Didn't Carl Jung say it was a spiritual thirst, but just the wrong drink or something to that effect? I'm paraphrasing Jung in a way I shouldn't. But yeah, it's true that there is a spiritual thirst, and I'm glad we touched upon a couple of the methods and practices that you include in this book. But I just want to paint the picture for our listeners that this is just the tip of the iceberg. You have provided a multiplicity of these great multi-dimensional. You know, you talked about us being multi-dimensional human beings, but these are multidimensional tools that draw from all of the world's religions and from just your practical experience of saying, you know what, I've been given this gift of sobriety. I want to maintain it. I don't want to just exist. I want to thrive. And these are your own tools that you've shared with the world.
They are non-punitive, strength-based tools. So, for instance, Gateways 1 through 3, I see and clarify as the foundation. And those I define as clarity, awakening, and relationship. You know, the third step is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. So relationship. Those are all positive, proactive, beautiful concepts as opposed to some sort of punitive kind of things. Gateways 4 through 7, I call the inner journey, and they're clearing, cleansing, and releasing. So these are the processes that go on through these steps. They're not always described that way, and they're not always described, although that's the process. It's a non-punitive way of describing the healing process. Then gateways 8 and 9 are rectification, transition, and release. Ah, that kind of makes you want to breathe, doesn't it? And so these are part of the evolutionary process of these 12 steps. And then gateways 10 through 12 correlate, of course, with the 10th through the 12th steps, and those are the daily walk, continuing to take personal inventory. And then this 11th step, which is all about seeking through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand God. And then the 12th step has to do with having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, carrying the message to other alcoholics, practicing these principles in all our affairs. So there's the spiritual path. What principles? So what I'm trying to do is just expand on, okay, well, let's talk about them. What are they? How can you understand these principles? So we practice these principles in all our affairs, and you know, when we share these with other people. And so in the Christian sense, that would be thought of as evangelism. The interesting thing is, though, Christians and various people knock at my door. I don't know. They're not just Christians. People knock at the door and are trying to recruit. People in AA don't recruit.
Right. What do they say? It's by attraction,
really,
not promotion, right?
Attraction rather than promotion.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
Really,
so they're saying, hey, that works. Why should? What's happening? How is this damaged life suddenly made whole right before my eyes? What happened?
Transformed, really.
Yes, transformed.
Really, if you think about it, it's the essence. The 12-step programs are the essence of the law of attraction.
Yes, great.
They really
are. Indeed, and you have really given the world a great gift here, Jane. This is revolutionary.
You.
This is taking what is already, I've heard Father Thomas Keating describe the 12 steps as God's gift to the 20th century. It's beautiful to recognize that what was once such a stigma is now we're realizing this is actually a gift, and yet, you know, this is the 21st century, and we're into an interspiritual age where we're not afraid to learn from all the world's traditions. So you have really done a beautiful job. I highly recommend this book. I'm looking forward to spending some more time with it because there's just so much here. But it's also, you know, it works in a very practical way. It's in so many ways. It's a history. It's a personal story. It's a workbook. It really is just a great tool that allows individuals to find what works for them
and
all
pretty.
In a very positive way. It's beautiful.
It's pretty. There are a lot of wonderful illustrations and bright colored.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Really, I made it visually beautiful on purpose.
Yes, well, and I have to give a shout out to Sacred Stories. Sacred Stories Publishing has done a beautiful job, and I think we'll be seeing more in terms of you know, opportunities to learn from you, Jane, and hear you speak. And so stay tuned at Sacred Stories to see where Jane takes the gateways. And I'm really looking forward to launching this revolution and seeing more and more lives transform. So thank you, Jane, for this beautiful work.
Thank you, Kate.
It's been great talking with you, and hope to talk to you soon.
Great. Look forward to it.
Take care.